Welcome to episode 99 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. That's right, episode 99. I'm not sure that matters for anything other than our next one will be 100.
Woohoo, what a party.
Which also doesn't really matter. This is Eric, you're Alan, and we'll move on into our off-the-tee section. This week, we're focusing on one thing off the tee, the LPGA's English proficiency. You could call it a rule, but it's not yet a rule. It's kind of a work-in-progress rule. It was open for discussion, or however you might want to say it, at a player meeting of 45 or so Korean players. And it's causing quite the controversy.
Pretty interesting, yeah. Like you just stated about it, it's not a rule. Nothing's enforced. Nothing's even set in stone. It's more of a, hey, this is coming. We're still working on it. Let's open a dialogue and make sure this we can make it an effective policy. And it's pretty much been run into the LPGA Tour's, you know, English is the official language.
Right, and the critics are being fairly harsh. The word racism has been used. Various other things have been said. People are not sure if it's legal because hitting a golf ball is very different, they will tell you, from being able to speak English. And the LPGA's point of view is that because they rely on sponsorship dollars, because pro-ams are such a big part of their deal, that the Korean pros or anyone that doesn't speak English or really try to communicate, certainly with pro-am partners, give victory speeches and communicate with the press, those three key areas, it harms their ability to retain sponsors. It harms their ability to have pro-am players fork over $5,000 to $10,000 to play with these professional golfers. Basically, they're saying the game of golf at that level is about a lot more than hitting a golf ball.
Yeah, it's definitely more on the entertainment business relationship aspect of it. The LPGA is hurting for sponsors. They've had some long-term sponsors have come and gone since Commissioner Bivens has come on board. So at this point, I mean, they really need to reach out to the people that really make the tournaments run and provide the prize money. It's a good business decision for the LPGA Tour part. It's getting completely trashed at the moment by some people, the legality and the racist, but also, we've heard the argument for being a double standard. The LPGA is becoming more of a global tour, and if an American won at, say, South Korea or Japan or whatever, are they going to be required to give their victory speech in that country's native language?
The LPGA Tour is playing in more events in different countries. They're playing in Mexico. They're playing at some events in Asia and so on. So true, but they're still a U.S.-based tour. The rules, tentatively, would be this. Players who are targeted, that's another thing people are having a hissy fit about, but players who are targeted as not being proficient with English or using English enough will be given a test, an oral test. If they don't pass the test, their membership on the LPGA Tour will be suspended. The first tests, though, will not be until the end of 2009. So any players that were quote-unquote suspended would have all of the offseason to bring their proficiency back up. New players, once they get their tour card, would have 2 years on tour before they could even be tested. There's a fairly, it's not quite as harsh as some people seem to think it is. You have 2 years to learn. It goes into the fact that at the end of next season, the LPGA Tour is still primarily U.S.-based, so I understand that people want to throw out the few events calendar that are in different countries. And the Koreans, a lot of them themselves are not opposed to the rules. A lot of the objections came from the fathers of the Korean players, and I'm not sure of the father-daughter dynamic in that whole thing, but the fathers are very much revered from what I understand. And a lot of the Koreans, like Seri Park and Angel Park and some of the minority-type players on the LPGA Tour, support the rule because they understand it's a business decision. You can't compare the PGA Tour to this because the PGA Tour isn't having the Korean influx that the LPGA Tour is having. And you can't throw out, I've seen a number of articles talking about like Angel Cabrera as an example. He still would have won the U.S. Open. He still would have played in the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open is not run by the PGA Tour. One LPGA major is run by the LPGA Tour, and that's the LPGA Championship. The rest are still, you qualify to get in, however you can qualify to get in. You don't have to be on the LPGA Tour to get in. So all this blah, blah, insert name here would not have won a major. Most of that's, pure poppycock, basically.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing to see just how quickly this requirement was just really, I mean, people have just really run off with it, and you do get quite a bit of time to learn the language.
Not even the language. That's the other thing, too. They don't have to learn the language. They have to learn golf-specific language, which, I played well today. They don't have to go, they don't have to talk about architecture. They don't have to interior design their home. They don't have to discuss something with the mechanic. They don't have to be able to buy a book in English in a bookstore or order a coffee at Starbucks. They have to talk about golf-related stuff. I'd like to thank my sponsors. I hit a nice fade into the fifth hole. You should open your stance up a little bit and don't take your swing back so far on your backswing to your pro-am partner. You know, it's all golf-related stuff, so it's a subset, too, of the language. And I think that's important as well. We're not basically requiring English proficiency. We're requiring English subset of, you know, golf proficiency.
It'd just be interesting to see what I think the term we've seen thrown around is sufficient skills in English. It'll be interesting to see when the rule actually becomes concrete and you know, part of the LPGA bylaws, to see exactly what is the definition of sufficient skills in English and just what they come up for that.
Right, and I don't think you can't have a policy that's toothless. So there has to be some threat of something. They can't fine players because that's kind of, you know, the wealthier ones could afford it, and the less successful ones couldn't afford it as well. So you can't really fine players. What you can do, though, is threaten to suspend them. And at this point, it's just a threat. I don't expect to see anyone even suspended. So until the first suspension comes down, you can't even say, oh, the penalty is too harsh. Right now, it's just more of a threat, I think, than anything. So I think a lot of people jumped on the high horse and the high moral ground and tried to say, oh, this is racist. I don't support it at all. When really, it's, from the LPGA's perspective, good business, and it will benefit the players in the end as well. So that's tends to be where I've come down on it.
Yeah, I mean, more sponsorship, you know, more interaction with the sponsors. It's going to mean that some of these sponsors, they're going to think about, you know what, we had such a great time last year at Pick Your Name event, but we're going to, you know, re-up our commitment to the next 5 years or whatever. And I think for a tour that's kind of hurting image-wise for sponsors, I think it's a good thing. It will be interesting as far as, again, what's the definition for sufficient skills in English and things like that. But all in all, I don't think it's a horrible policy. And I think it'll end up, you know, hopefully being good for the LPGA.
We'll be back.
I mark my Titleist with a black dot over the number one.
With two blue dots.
With a red line through the Titleist.
With a DH over the Titleist.
Just two little dots.
I mark my golf ball pretty simply.
It's kind of complicated.
Holy orange with a striped black line.
Just like this.
Two dots with a black dot over the number.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark a golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Welcome back to this week's forum topic of the week, started by Rich F. Who is your player of the year? Tiger Woods or Padraig Harrington?
Tiger Woods.
Ditto. Now, the other side, of course, two wins, both majors, four top five finishes for Padraig Harrington. Two wins in the majors is the big deal. You and I argued a couple weeks ago that he should be second best in the world at this point. I still believe that, although he's missed two cuts in a row in the playoff events, so that doesn't help his case much. Tiger Woods, four wins, one of them a major, and two top five finishes, one being a second, of course, at the Masters, the other being a top five at the CA Championship at Doral. I vote for Tiger as well. He won a major. He won 50% of the majors he played in. He finished second in the other 50% of the majors he played in. He did so on a broken freaking leg. And though it doesn't count for much, it counts for a little bit, the fact that Padraig Harrington won his two majors without Tiger in the field. Again, not a whole lot, but that might, if they were in a dead heat, that might be the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I think that definitely gets brought up, the fact that Tiger did not play in the majors that Harrington won. I also think, you know, the fact that Woods played six events, he won four of them. His knee holds up for the entire year. We could be seeing something that's just historic as far as the amount of wins he could have. Whereas Harrington, I realize this, I think Geezer had brought up the point that he was, you know, he's first in the order of merit. Well, that's based, you know, largely upon what he did in the three majors. He hasn't won in Europe. He hasn't won anywhere else on the PGA Tour. He won two majors, which is great, but he's only won twice out of,
well, he won the Irish PGA, didn't he?
Yeah. You know, out of the 14 events.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is we're looking at it's player of the year, not player of the month, not player of a nice five-week span. And if you look at the total for the entire year, yes, Woods hasn't played, you know, since the U.S. Open. Look at the FedEx rankings. That's up to date. It's through, you know, yesterday. Woods is still 32nd.
And Harrington?
Is 44th.
That's interesting. Woods has also won more money on the PGA Tour than Padraig Harrington, despite Padraig Harrington playing in 14 events, as you mentioned, and Woods playing again in six. So that says volumes as well. And of course, winnings at the British Open and the PGA count towards that. So, you know, and they're not cheap championships either. So Woods has got the leg up there as well. It's going to be close. It's 50-50. I think a lot of the PGA Tour players who get the vote on this may come down on the side of Tiger Woods. I think in the back of their minds, they're thinking, well, yeah, I think they're giving a little bit of weight to, again, if it's a dead heat, I think they're giving a little bit of weight to the fact that Padraig won both of his majors without Tiger playing. It wasn't true last year, of course, but he just won the one, so a little different. But he won both of them this year without Tiger in the field, and Tiger did win half of the ones he played in. We'll see. Post in the comments or something if you have a vote or whatever, or post in the forum thread that we'll link to. We'll be right back.
I mark my Titleist with three red dots around the number.
Three crosses around the script.
With my initials.
With two blue dots. A black dot here.
Here and here.
Just like that.
With my family's initials.
With an R and a K.
With three blue dots.
Red dot.
Un pequeño círculo.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Vijay Singh is the best putter in the world. He keeps telling himself that. It seems to work.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. He had an epiphany or something, but all of a sudden he's dropping bombs from all over the place, including five-footers. So, you know, once again, he goes out there and...
he shoots a final round 63 and wins by five shots.
Obliterates.
He didn't just win. I mean, this wasn't a playoff like the week before. It's in the playoffs, but it wasn't a playoff. It wasn't even close. The back nine was... kind of boring.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I don't know if tournament record 22 under par.
This course has produced a lot of great winners, too. Vijay Singh's won it a couple times. He overtook Tiger Woods to be number one in the world at this tournament when he won. Phil Mickelson beat Tiger Woods last year. Tiger Woods has won there. And Adam Scott's won there. So a pretty fine list of champions, too, at this golf course.
Yeah, it is. Very much so. You know, I think up until, you know, Vijay started dropping putts from all over the place. You know, the highlight of the tournament was watching Mike Weir. Goes out, throws a course tying record of 61 in the first round, and kind of looked like he was going to claim a victory here. It was not to be, though.
Sergio Garcia's name was in the mix again, until he had some trouble. The leaderboard looked pretty interesting for a while.
Yeah, and now, unfortunately, with Vijay winning two, he can pretty much finish last.
Yeah, he can pretty much take the rest of the time off and it'll be tough to catch him. There's more volatility this year, but not quite that much.
No.
Probably not enough to beat him.
No, I think Sergio's going to have to win this week and next week and to make it interesting. So we'll see what happens. But congratulations to Vijay, who, I don't know, is he knocking on the door for player of the year? He wins out?
He might have to win out because he's gotten a major and missed the cut in a couple of majors. So Vijay Singh would have to do some pretty amazing stuff going out. Mike Weir shoots an even par round of 71. Ernie Els, one of the only other big names to shoot under par, a round of 70. He finishes tied for third with Camilo Villegas, who shoots a 73 following his blistering 63 in the third round. Tim Herron shot a 65 to leap into a tie for fifth with Sergio, who shot 72. Chad Campbell, we'll bring that name up shortly, rounds of 67, 70, 69, 66 to finish tied for seventh with Justin Leonard, Jim Furyk, and Steve Marino, Ken Duke, Ben Crane finishing T10, the three of them. So a lot of names sitting on top of the leaderboard, but Vijay Singh obliterates them all and drops putts from over 30 feet twice and over 60 feet once to make it a boring back nine. Probably just the way he likes it.
Very true.
On to Ryder Cup news. Nick Faldo on Sunday night added Ian Poulter and Paul Casey to the Ryder Cup team, snubbing Colin Montgomery, which most figured, Darren Clarke, which shocked many as he's won twice this year. Poulter has an amazing two top tens this year, and Casey's yet to win. A few others, Carl Pedersen, probably a big snub there. The guy's won twice in the past couple of years. And no doubt there are a few others that you could probably throw in there too, but the Lee Westwood Darren Clarke mega team is no more. Ian Poulter and Paul Casey or the 11th and 12th members of the European Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, Paul Casey, you could kind of see as Faldo's picking somebody who's gotten hot the last part of the year and is playing fairly well. The Poulter pick, I don't know. I really don't understand where this is coming from. If this is coming off of his back nine at the British Open, that's pretty weak. If that's what you're going to base,
especially since it's not a course similar or set up like that at all.
No, it's not going to be like that, even close to, remotely close to that. And you're not pick. I mean, Darren Clarke's got a 10-7-3 record in the past five Ryder Cups. And to not have him, especially the fact that he's won twice this year, whereas Poulter won.
I don't remember.
Never. The most flipping off camera people and the ball and whatnot. But
he won that prize. Two top tens this entire year. It's pretty pathetic. A lot of people. course, Poulter and Casey, both from Great Britain, both English guys. So a lot of people are wondering if there's a bit of a national nepotism there, a little nationalism kind of thing going on there. Don't know.
An interesting pick. Paul Casey, definitely. Poulter, I have no idea. So,
yeah, many people thought Darren Clark was a lock, myself probably included. Poulter, of course, vehemently denied having gotten the nod to skip a European Tour event to play in the PGA Tour event. His stated reason was that he had to play his 15 events, but, you know, there's a bunch of fall series events and he could play one of those. Don't know.
Quite bizarre.
Paul Azinger, of course, Paul Azinger made his picks this morning. Chad Campbell, the surprise pick there, joining Steve Stricker, Hunter Mahan, and J.B. Holmes. Steve Stricker has been consistent. J.B. Holmes is from Kentucky and, unlike the other guys, won this year, although it was a long time ago. Supposedly knows the course like the back of his hand, according to Paul Azinger. So, okay, I can go with that pick. Hunter Mahan's a good guy. I think he likes pressure. I've been in favor of getting some younger guys on the team that don't have the history of losing and want to kind of show the world what they can do. And then Chad Campbell. He's been under the radar, but he's up there in greens and regulation. He's great off the tee, according to Paul Azinger and stuff. So kind of a surprise pick to see Chad Campbell, but in looking at it, a good four picks.
Yeah, I don't think that you could really... I think part of the picks, was there really anybody better? I mean, it's not like we're sitting there on the European side saying he picked Poulter, and there was a list of, you know, there's a litany of other players that would have been a better selection, whereas on the American side, who? You know, really, who's been playing hot?
Yeah, Paul Azinger said he had to win to get on the team, probably. And the only other Americans that won that could have been picked would be Sean O'Hare, who won at the Pods, and DJ Trahan, who won, I'm forgetting what, the Travelers or something. No, that's Stuart Sink, but DJ Trahan won something a while ago this year. And the rest of the guys are like Steve Lowry, not going to get picked. You know, Parker McLaughlin won in Reno, not going to pick him. You know, guys like that. So of the guys that won that are Americans, there weren't that many picks available. So you kind of had to go outside, pick Hunter Mahan, pick Steve Stricker, and pick Chad Campbell, who's fairly consistent. So.
Yeah, I mean, the only Americans that have really won this year, you know, have been Kenny Perry, Anthony Kim, you know, Ben Curtis, you know, the guys that are already solidified on the team.
Bill Mickelson, right.
As far as that goes. So I think the picks are good. You know, the J.B. Holmes pick. The fact that...
He doesn't have to play him. He could play him one time,
yeah,
too.
The fact that...
He doesn't have, just because they're on the team doesn't mean they have to be played every time.
The fact it's in Kentucky, and like you said, he allegedly knows the course very well. That makes sense. You know, I definitely like the fact... there is a very youthful contingent on this team. And I think that's great. I think that's great for American golf, you know, in the absence of Tiger Woods. I think there's going to be some compelling stories that, you know, people are going to be able to grab onto and really, you know, start looking and following Hunter Mahan and Anthony Kim and, you know, even Ben Curtis and things like that. So I think it's some great picks.
And I think going back to where you use players, you know, I don't think J.B. Holmes is going to be paired up necessarily in alternate shot. I think he'd be a great four-ball partner because he's either going to make a birdie or bogey. And if you pair him with a guy that makes a lot of pars, that round, that twosome could be very good. Steve Stricker could be that guy that makes a lot of pars paired with J.B. Holmes. You never know. Chad Campbell, another guy, he might be good in alternate shot because he's fairly consistent. He's a good ball striker. He's going to leave his partner in the fairway and on the green somewhere. So it could be good there. And Hunter Mahan's got a bit of both. Good wedge play, decent off the tee, good iron player, so putter. So, you know, where those picks fit in. J.B. Holmes may be, like I said, a four-ball specialist. He may be a try to eagle every par five and try to get wedges onto all the par fours kind of guy.
Yeah, I think it's a good team, and you know, we don't have, is the top of the, you know, I think the big thing is how is the top of the team going to perform? You know, Furyk's been playing well, but, you know, Mickelson, eh.
He's tired. We'll see. All we can do is comment on the picks for now. We'll comment on the Ryder Cup after it's happened. We'll make our staff picks too, but for this week, you can check our show notes out online, of course. Click the links to all the stories we've talked about. There'll be a bunch for the LPGA one, so click a few of them maybe. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Proseski saying, this is the best podcast in the world. This is the best podcast.
Okay, VJ.